Hi, Jane, David Baker from BBC.
Hi, David,
nice to meet you.
Hi there. What a lovely, lovely office.
Thanks.
What are these?
Jars. These are some of the colours that we've been working on our most recent colour palettes. So we just collect them all into different...
Hackney in East London has become a vibrant hub for the capital's startup culture. The area is full of entrepreneurs setting up new businesses. But this is not what you might imagine. Not everyone here is in their 20s. Some of these people are launching companies just at the time of their life when they might have thought they were heading for retirement, including Jane Kellock, who in her 50s left the corporate world to set up a consultancy that predicts future fashion trends.
I was asked to come up with an idea for a new business for someone that I used to work with. I was really excited. I put a business plan together. And then when I presented it, I was met with a lot of negativity. So it kind of made me think, well, you know, sod you sort of thing. I could do this myself. It was actually incredibly liberating. And it felt like the absolute right time. My children were off my hands, they were at university, and I could work 14-hour days if I wanted to. So it was incredibly challenging, but also really exciting.
Are you going to retire?
I don't really like the word retirement. I'd like to slow down eventually when I get a bit older, but I hate the idea of suddenly one day not working and sitting by the fire with my slippers on. I think increasingly the word retirement has negative connotations and that people would like to do things on their own terms rather than completely retire. I'm a creative person, so I like to having creative projects on the go, and my work is my life, so I don't really want to give it up.
I'm David Baker, and in this edition of In Business, I'm going to be asking why people would want to stay in the workforce long after the age when their parents would have retired, and what new challenges we're going to be facing as we enter a world in which many of us will be working long into our old age. So what was it like for Jane to take the plunge and set up a business on her own?
I was sharing a studio with two other people and I had one or two freelance people helping me. And I was working 7 days a week and I was working 12-hour days. It was incredibly intense because I was given a very lucky break in that I was given a big project straight away to work on and a very tight deadline. So I was the IT person, I was the office manager, I was the creative director, I was the everything you can think of. And it was incredibly stressful. And I look back on it now and think, how did I ever survive that? But I did. And here we are now.
Jane's company, USP, it stands for Unique Style Platform, has come a long way since those early days. It now employs 5 staff and a number of freelancers, and it's doing well. But you don't need to think that big to be a late-life entrepreneur.
I'm Cherry Harker, the founder of Swimsuit, a neoprene bikini business, which I founded at the age of 76.
Cherry Harker, who runs her business single-handedly from home, is one of an increasing number of people who are refusing to retire. After a career working with a husband that's included running nightclubs and selling classic cars, she set up Swimsuit with a Z, which sells colourful bikinis made from neoprene, a fabric more usually associated with wetsuits.
This is very pretty. This is all neoprene bikinis,
yes,
in blue and pink, a rather lovely mauve there and black, and then very, very sort of Côte d'Azur, orange and light blue there.
Yes, I think I like the hot colours.
The influence came from your own background on the Côte d'Azur, I think, was that right?
Yes, I was very privileged having a month every summer from the age of about 17 to 25. You knew all about bikinis because that's all you wore. And you noticed that when you were trying any sort of water sport, it was fairly disastrous because, you know, they were just using cottons. There was no elasticating stuff going on like that.
And these are made of thick neoprene, and they're really going to hang on. You don't need to be hanging on to these waterspeeding.
They're very fun. Yes.
Now, Cherry, a lot of people listening to this might say, gosh, by the time I'm 76, I really want to have retired by now. I want to have my feet up on the sofa, perhaps go on a cruise. Why aren't you doing that?
Well, I've never really thought about that. You know, I had an awful lot of holidays early on in life, and you get your adrenaline rush because you get your highs and you get your lows, and you get a real buzz out of, you know, finding something and doing it. There's a real attraction to doing that, an addiction perhaps.
Cherry and Jane are not alone. Since the UK's official retirement age, 60 for women and 65 for men, was abolished in 2011, more and more of us are now working into our 60s or 70s, our 80s even. Some of us because we want to, others because we can't afford to give up work, as the government slowly raises the age when we can start collecting our state pension. But whatever the reason, that extension of the traditional working life may actually be good for us.
Do you think not retiring improves your health?
Oh, definitely. I think if you're sitting at home and watching too much TV, you're not stimulated enough and you've got to keep your brain going as much as you can. Have another shot of caffeine, hope for the best.
Cherry could get that caffeine at another business, one she runs with her husband, Molly's Den, an indoor market in Winchester, with a very nice cafe attached, where traders can rent stalls to sell, well, pretty much anything so long as it's vintage. You can rent a 6-foot unit here, or even just a shelf. And many of the stallholders are already well past retirement age.
I'm Jean Foster. I'm holding a unit here in Molly's Den in Winchester.
Can I be cheeky and ask how old you are?
75.
I'm Brian Stillwell. I'm Jean's partner. I'm working with her on the antiques. I'm 76.
What are we seeing here on the shelves over here? We've got three big shelf units crammed with stuff. Take me through that.
The glass is mainly from the 1950s with quite a few bits from the 1930s and 40s. And there's a couple of 19th century pieces there.
Many people of your age would have retired by now. They'd be having a life of the sofa or gardening or maybe going on a cruise.
Yeah.
Why aren't you doing that?
I really enjoy doing this so much and I just don't want to stop. It's so important to do it because you find that when you first retire, you tend to sort of think, oh, that's it, I've done my 40-odd years and now it's time to give up. But you sit around and then you think, well, why? What's the purpose of it? You've still got to have an interest. And I think if you don't, then I think your life gets very narrow. And as long as you can keep going and you've got your health, then why not?
Yeah, I didn't want to sit around and do nothing or just watch television.
And I don't really want to sort of stop until I'm forced to.
Most of us are living longer, and we're living longer more healthily. That's really important. That means depending on your saving rates and depending on how much you want to retire on, most of us should be planning to be working into our 70s and possibly even our 80s.
Linda Grattan is Professor of Management Practice at the London Business School and co-author of a book called The 100-Year Life.
When you thought you were going to retire at 60, what you really thought is that you would have a three-stage life, that you would have a first stage of full-time education, a second stage of full-time work, and a third stage of retirement. And that's, you didn't really have to plan for that. You didn't, as an individual, have to make any big choices about your life. You just followed the herd. When working life elongates into our 70s or 80s, as it will, clearly that three-stage life is going to break down. How could you possibly be educated only once in your life? How could you work full-time right from the age of 20 till the age of 70? Surely you'd need to take breaks and do different things. And why would you want to retire at 60 when you could live until you're 100? So what we're suggesting is that the multi-stage life will replace it. And by multi-stage, I mean that you do many different things at many different times. You know, so for example, why aren't you at 40 taking a gap year? Why aren't you taking a gap year at 60? Why aren't you setting your own business up when you are 40 years old? Why aren't you becoming an independent producer or craftsperson or whatever it is you want to do? You can do all those things. I'm not saying everybody can do this, but what I am saying is that the majority of people can. And more than that, the majority of people must.
People who are hearing this who are over 50, they are very much in a transition period at the moment. Certainly when they started work, this wasn't going to be the plan. How should they respond?
They need to respond really quickly. Please don't think that somehow the world is going to solve this problem for you. we have no evidence that it will. You have really got to be self-determining and actually say, I'm going to solve this problem. I'm going to learn a new skill. I'm going to start a business. I'm going to find a company that wants over 50s and over 60s. I'm going to build a portfolio where I do other different things. It really requires each of us to be as active as possible. That doesn't mean to say there's no role for government. There is a role for government and there is a role for corporations. But that combination of us as individuals, organisations and governments is a very, very powerful combination.
The government is trying to get 1 million more people over 50 into the workplace by 2022. And some companies are already doing their bit. B&Q is well known for this. But there are others. Marks and Spencers, the Co-op, Aviva, to name but three. And some are even taking on older people as apprentices.
Who's your appointment with?
Sorry?
Who is the appointment with?
I don't know.
One of them is Barclays, which is training them for a customer service position called Essential Banker.
I'm Jonathan Allen, and I'm an Essential Banker working at Barclays at Notting Hill Gate, and I'm 62 years old.
I'm Lucille Galloway. I'm an essential banker at Barclays Banking, Ealing Broadway, and I'm 54 years old.
Over the years, I've done a variety of jobs. I started in the law, then went into accountancy, and for many years I worked for charities. The opportunity arose to become an apprentice, and I grabbed it with both hands.
I was actually a nanny for a private family for a long time.
And why did you leave that job?
But the girls were now grown, 15 or so. That's how I ended up having to look for another job. I went to the job centre, and as I sat there, I noticed Barclays' logo. They said to me, oh, they're recruiting for an over-50s apprenticeship. At our age in life, this is almost like somebody throwing a lifeline. Nobody's going to choose somebody at 51 or 60, and there's somebody of 26. That's just not what we have known until now.
I was unemployed for a very long period of time, mainly because I had a nervous breakdown in my late 50s and found myself effectively regarded by the market as unemployable. I applied for literally thousands of jobs until Barclays. They were looking at what I could give to its customers and, well, it worked out for me. There are some customers who would prefer to speak to somebody who's got silver hair. The comment that I often get is, I am old school and customers want to come and see me because I am old school.
And I should really tell our listeners here that actually you're also dressed in a wonderfully old school way. You're in a three-piece suit with a little watch chain, a lovely, elegant handkerchief sticking out your pocket. Is this important for you to appear in this way as well?
Well, essentially, it's showtime. You know, I dress to suit my public. I actually know of customers who've come in with friends to the branch and have actually transferred their business from other high street banks to Barclays simply from the interaction that they've had with me.
How does that make you feel?
Appreciated. You know, it's no exaggeration to say that I had been on the scrap heap and Barclays came along and threw me a lifeline.
So why would Barclays hire older apprentices? The bank's not a charity or a back-to-work scheme, after all, but a business. A question for Mike Thompson, Barclays' head of early careers and apprenticeships.
We felt it was a really good fit with trying to build a workforce that serves all of our different customers, young and old. We also saw there were a large number of long-term unemployed older people seeking opportunities, and we felt it was a perfect opportunity for Barclays to do something positive for society, but also bring in a very different type of talent into our business.
Is there anything specific that older people bring to an organisation, do you think?
I think they bring a wide range of skills. We find them great working and mentoring with our younger apprentices because of the experience they have. They bring a calmness to the organisation. They deal with customers in a very mature way, are able to have good conversations with people, often in difficult situations. They bring life experience and empathy. They've also had probably most of the financial transactions you'll have in your life. So bought a car and taken a mortgage, and therefore they understand what somebody's going through, which often if you're a younger apprentice, you still need to learn these things. We also find in certain more sensitive areas of the business, places like complaint handling, fraud management, We do obviously have very difficult, challenging conversations that can be had. And often they want to deal with somebody who perhaps understands them, has the empathy. And you don't always get that perhaps with some younger people just joining the workforce, but you clearly will with somebody who's been through some of those experiences. We do have customers who will look out for people who look like them, who act like them or understand them. And in certain instances, we have people queuing up specifically to wait for some of our older apprentices because they want to talk to them and not to a younger person. So it kind of works for us.
But what about the elephant in the room? Aren't older apprentices, well, just a bit slower to learn, a bit more tired, less dynamic maybe than the young ones?
Our older apprentices have as much energy and passion as our younger ones. We don't see that differential. What we do see is perhaps their skill sets and their knowledge are different and their experiences are different. And that's why, we judge everyone as an individual. We don't really look at their age. I think it's probably wrong to say that because you're older, you have less energy or you're less able to pick up skills. And that's not the case in what we've seen so far.
But won't these older apprentices just be taking work away from younger people? Well, no, says Linda Grattan. That's not how it works.
It is a fallacy to imagine that there only are a certain number of jobs and that if one group gets them, the others don't. Let me give you the best example of that. In America, tens of millions of women have been absorbed into the labour force with no negative impact at all. In fact, it increased productivity. So having our older people in the workforce helps the productivity of the UK, and some of them will be creating jobs for young. So please, if you're over 60, don't feel that you have to move out because you're taking the seat of somebody else. You're not.
In fact, according to the CIPD, the Human Resources Professionals Organisation, the UK will need to fill 13.5 million job vacancies in the next 10 years, but will only have 7 million young people leaving school and college. So what does one of those young people think of the idea of working until they're 80?
I'm Joss Trenner. I'm 21 years old and I've just graduated from the University of Sussex.
Joss, you're just starting on your work life. How do you feel about retirement? What plans have you got?
For retirement? Well, I haven't got plans for a career so far, but for retirement, I guess maybe move out the country, go somewhere sunny, have some quality time.
And when do you think you might be able to do that?
Well, hopefully around 65, maybe early 60s.
OK, what have I told you that you're probably going to be working through till about the age of 80?
That's quite surprising. To be honest, I guess I'll know how I feel about it better when I get there, whether or not it's a burden to keep doing the job I'm doing or if I still love it. But that's definitely a lot older than I thought I'd be retiring.
And I can see by your face that that's actually a little bit of a shock, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
It may be a shock, but at least people like Joss have time to prepare for this new way of working. Jane Kellock, who we met earlier at her trend consultancy in Hackney, knows plenty of people further along their careers for whom the end of the official retirement age is causing problems.
Bigger companies, as they are struggling, may well see it as a negative thing to have someone that has no end to their career and may decide to make them redundant earlier. And then what do they do at the age of 61? You lose your job. The chances are that you're not going to find another job. I've got several friends that have been made redundant in their late 50s that are looking for jobs now and are being overlooked in favour of younger people because they're cheaper. There are not that many jobs in B&Q for older experts. And I think it's a very real problem. And I see ageism in the workplace being the very last kind of bastion, last form of discrimination.
In fact, discriminating on the basis of one's age is illegal. But many employers are finding ways round this by a subtle change in the way they handle employee appraisals.
I'm Vanessa Beck. I'm a senior lecturer in work and organisation at the University of Bristol.
Dr. Beck has been looking at how appraisals have changed in the last few years, from ideally pleasant one-on-one conversations aimed at helping an employee grow, to a rather more hostile form of continuous performance assessment.
It's actually quite easy to do if you have an ongoing niggle that you enter on a regular basis. So, you know, we had one interview, I think it was a trade union rep who told us that an individual that they'd represented had been marked down as adequate as opposed to excellent because they'd yawned in a meeting. And it's something as simple as that. If that then happens repeatedly, somebody marked down as not excellent, but as perhaps adequate or okay-ish, that is then quite easy if you have that consistently over a number of months to demonstrate how perhaps performance is declining. And hey presto, you have a situation where you say, well, your performance is going downhill. Another example might be, and this is from an NUT survey that we've been looking at, where older female teachers, as soon as they felt that they were the oldest in a school, they were targeted to be managed out of the organisation. Individuals are put into impossible situations where they can't really cope. So, for example, teachers being given additional workload, additional marking, additional groups of difficult pupils, and therefore then have to say, I can't do this anymore, which often they realise was the intention in the first place.
But what if someone isn't quite pulling their weight anymore, or indeed works in a sector, say like construction, where they're no longer physically up to it? Is it really fair to force an employer to keep them on?
There are obviously difficult situations, but there's quite a lot of things that could be done instead. So thinking about shifting the role and responsibility of that individual to perhaps be less heavy in terms of the physical engagement or draw more on their experience that they have already. There's also obvious rights that individuals have depending on the severity of the issues that they face. So if it does move them towards something like disability, then there's obviously the reasonable adjustments that can be made. But also any employee has the right to, after 26 weeks of service, has the right to request flexible work, home working, part-time work and so on. So there's ways in which perhaps the job itself, but also the employment context, can be adjusted to make it more beneficial for both sides of the relationship.
Whether we stay in our organisations or set out to become an entrepreneur, the truth is that we'll need to find ways of earning an income until much later in our lives than many of us have planned. Linda Grattan has done the maths, and when she spells it out to her MBA students, the room goes silent.
We ask our students, what are you saving? And most of them are saving less than 10% of their income. And then we say, well, what would you like to retire on? And they say, well, at least 50% of my final income, which, by the way, is quite a low amount. Most of us would struggle with that. So then we show the formula, which you can find in our website, which shows pretty clearly they are going to be working into their 70s and 80s. No government is going to tell you this because it's not an electable pledge. I can tell you this because I'm a professor and we've got the data. It's just the truth. Now, it's not a palatable truth and it's not an easy truth, but it is the truth. And so we as humans have got to prepare for that and to realise that working is going to be part of most of our lives, right the way through our lives.
One way we could make that process smoother might be easing ourselves out of one job into another one that would suit us better as we get older.
My name's Pamela Major and I work as a coach and workplace facilitator.
Now, Pamela, you haven't always worked as a coach. What were you doing before that?
Yes, my main career for 28 years was in the Foreign Office. I was a diplomat and did postings in China, Russia and Germany, as well as some very interesting jobs in Whitehall. The last job I did in the Foreign Office, actually, was not a political job, but a coaching job. And I realised I loved that one-to-one connection. So I started thinking, how could I transition out of the Foreign Office and start doing this as a second career?
How did that work out?
So it was almost like a wedge shape in that I was in the Foreign Office and then I started tailing down from that. And at the same time, the thin end of the new wedge was starting, which was building up my coaching credentials and experience. So that then became the fatter part of the rectangle. And the Foreign Office eventually then dropped away.
You're well established now as a coach. May I ask how old you are now?
I'm now 59.
So at 59, do you have any thoughts about retirement, rather than, say, a phased retirement?
I think about doing less work. When I left the Foreign Office, I wanted to continue doing 3 days a week. And I'm now working on reducing it further. But I don't know what that will look like. It might be I'll keep a handful of coaching clients for another 10 years.
Is this the beginning of another wedge starting to taper off in your life?
I think so. There's the wedge of things I want to be spending my life doing, one of which is amateur dramatics. And that's a wedge that's grown since I've had more time.
And if anyone's listening to this thinking, gosh, I quite like the idea of these wedges, I quite like the idea of this phase of retirement, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, well, don't think it has to be a cliff edge. You can start looking at things you want to do, and if it has to be in your spare time, then so be it. But start exploring those things while you still have the secure job, the secure income. Then explore whether you can ease off in the workplace. There's no harm in asking. See what your employer says. And then go down to 4 days, maybe three. And at the same time, building up what you want to do. For me, it wasn't as scary as I thought it would be.
From downsizing our employment as we move through our 50s and 60s, to setting up on our own, or even becoming a late-life apprentice, retirement today is already very different from how it was for our parents and grandparents. No longer does it seem to be the golf course-tinted holy grail of before, the point, if you like, of putting in all those years. Instead, it's becoming a career stage in its own right. Not everyone will welcome this, of course. A lot of us were looking forward to retiring. And it does depend on the state of our health and the state of our finances. There are plenty of people who are still working in their 60s and 70s who would much rather have stopped by now. And we did try, but perhaps unsurprisingly, they're not keen to talk about this on air. What if their boss heard, for example? But the good news is that so long as we put some thought into it, for a lot of us, this non-retirement retirement might actually turn out to be a lot of fun. So let's give the last word to two of our late-life entrepreneurs who wouldn't have it any other way. Vintage stallholder Gene Foster, and first, Cherry Harker, the inventor of those neoprene bikinis.
Well, if you've come to the end of a corporate career, you've got to think what it is that you actually want to do. What turns you on? What gives you drive and fire? You don't want to do anything that's a drudgery.
I'll keep on as long as I'm sort of physically able to do it. Once you're in here and you get talking to people, I think that's it. It's getting out and about and meeting people, and the camaraderie really between the trade, that's good. So all those things, they sort of give you incentive to carry on.